Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 24th, 2014, and you're listening to the best poker cast there is. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am a frozen Scott Long.
I know, what's the deal with this Polar Vortex version 2.0?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. When I find this polar bear named Vortex, I'm going to have no problem telling him what the freak I would do for a Klondike bar. I mean, if we're cold in Florida, I can't even imagine folks like Poker Geek that haven't wised up to learn that you can move out of Minnesota and into what used to be warmer climates. But, oh my gosh, I should not be walking on my morning walk and see people with their plants covered by sheets.
1,000 years from now, you know, some archaeologist will uncover a frozen Poker Geek MN, like, holding on to his mouse and, like, just covered in ice from this. I just don't understand. First of all, it's cold enough as it is up there, but then when this stuff comes through, how do you stay there? How do you not just go, all right, you know what, those guys are right, I'm moving south. It's crazy. But it is freaking cold. It's so cold. Last night I'm laying in bed and it's late and I'm like, the air conditioning just came on? And I'm like, oh no, it's the heat. You don't use heat in Florida.
I'll tell you why you don't use heat in Florida. Because it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
My wife has been freaking out. She's like, our thermostat says AUX heat. What does auxiliary heat mean? She had to look it up. It's like when your heat doesn't work. It goes to auxiliary heat.
It's the backup plan.
Oh, my God. She's like, it's blowing cold air out. I'm just going to turn it off.
Oh, man. Absolutely crazy.
That two Florida people bitching about the weather brought to you by today's sponsor.
Breaking news. This is very exciting, though, right?
Yeah, woke up to this.
Nice to see that some people are going to get paid.
Maybe.
Hey, Scott. Scott's going to get all of, what was it?
I get a sit and go coming, baby.
It's like $9 or something, $6?
Something like that, yeah.
But as Scott put on our notes here, breaking just last night, the claims administrator for the Full Tilt settlement announced that 30,000 undisputed claims have been approved and will be paid before March 31st. Players with disputed claims will have a chance to provide more information before the payout. What do you think about this, Scott? It's finally happening?
Yeah, I know there are a lot of people out there who thought it would never happen, so here it is. I mean, again, keep the champagne in the bottle.
Yeah.
Until you actually see it in your account, but it certainly sounds like it's getting there, and, you know, for me, it's just kind of like a guffaw kind of thing, getting my $9 or whatever, but for a lot of people I know that are listening, I mean, this is going to be a Christmas coming a little late this year, and I'm sure they're very excited about it, so.
This just in, empirical evidence is also in that the Bigfoot Yeti has been discovered in Wyoming. The remains have been brought to NORAD for defense purposes. But it's unbelievable that they're actually going to probably get their money now. It's fantastic. And, of course, PokerStars are still getting the shaft, even though they're helping pay all these people back.
Yeah, yeah.
They can't even get a license in New Jersey.
The man keeping them out of the country. So.
The man.
you know, I'm 30,000 to me, for some reason, seems like a small number. I mean, I don't even know what the right number would have been if somebody asked me how many people were owed money by Full Tilt. And of course, that's the undisputed claims. What that means is that they went through and the claims administrator verified that it was correct. Disputed ones are more like, I think they said, affiliates and pros and things like that probably had different arrangements.
Oh, see, I read it like 30,000 undisputed were like, that's how many champions there were. There were undisputed champions. on the site, and that's how many guys have had victories on Volto.
The course of all champion of Volto.
Of course. That's what I thought it was, but apparently it's something else. Yeah, it's true. I mean, how many disputed claims? There could be 50,000 of those. Who knows?
Yeah, so 30,000. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more players that were owed money. I mean, there could have been a lot of people that were getting less than $9 like me or are not as cheap as me and feel the need to go through the paperwork to get $9 back. And there's probably some people that just are freaked out, you know, the people that are shacked up in a cabin in the woods that are afraid that the it's going to know who they are now. They're off. They're on the grid now. by trying to get their full tilt money back. So I don't know what the actual number of players that the true number of players owed by money, but
and of course there's probably
I think it's more than 30,000.
Ton of players like me who got it all in with the nut flush and got one outed on the last hand they ever right. played on full tilt for a straight flush and lost a few hundred there and said I'm not going back. So those are the other unaccounted for players.
Or, you know, the other 27,000 players that the full tilt brass whispered, psst,
yeah.
Get out now, quick! Just like a boiler room, you know. So they got their money out before the crash came down. But
that's probably, you know, that's probably a lot more true than funny. You know, but speaking of getting out now, and New Jersey, you must have heard about this if you haven't. You're living under
a poker rock,
a counterfeit rock. But and I have one of those too, actually, for my pond area. I have a counterfeit rock. But
key in it? Is that how I get in when?
No, it's for covering up electrical stuff and everything.
But, I'm sure you got a key in there. That's all right.
if you have not heard, the Borgata at their poker open found some counterfeit chips. 2 million of them. Was it two or a million of them? Was it a million of them?
I believe, but I actually never saw a number, but somebody at our home game told us it was 2 racks of 5,000.
It was for their 2 million guarantee event, the opening event of the series. And they discovered this with, what, 24 players left?
27? I think it was 27,
27
yeah.
players left?
Well, they stopped it at 27. I don't know when they might have, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, there was 27 left when they stopped it, and that means, you know, a few hundred people got paid already and left.
Mm-hmm.
And then these 27 guys are sitting there, and they've shut it down. The gaming commission says we're going to investigate, and they literally suspended the tournament, canceled it, or whatever. And
yeah,
I don't know what
they're until they can figure it out.
Until they figure it out. And can you imagine being the guy who says to his wife, "All right, honey, I've been saving up, and I'm going to pick one tournament to travel across the country." And I'm going to spend all the money that I have saved on airfare and the buy-in for this $2 million guarantee event. And when I get there, I'm going to make you so proud. And he's in like eighth place right now, and they cancel the tournament. What is that poor guy going to do now? He's got to fly home?
I'll tell you what he's going to do. He's never going to play poker again.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
No, this whole thing, it's anger-inducing. It's unfortunate. Obviously, there's some humor as we're trying to make out of it, too. But I could just go on and on about this, and I know you're going to stop me because we only try to get the show to an hour. But one of the pictures I've seen, what absolute ridiculous counterfeiters.
Yeah, they...
Right? You know, here's the thing. I would never dream of making counterfeit chips and introducing into a tournament. But I like to believe that if somebody put a gun to my head, probably Mend the Master, and told me that I needed to, that I would do a better job of counterfeiting than these clowns did. I mean, the color wasn't even close, was it?
No, the colors were really... You know, and here's the deal. You know, when we brought this up at the home game, a couple of people had mentioned that local poker rooms have different chip denomination or colors for the same denominations in their tournaments and mix them in their tournaments and stuff. And you know what? That's fine. If they do that, hey, you know, it's going to be more difficult for you to determine if there are fake chips in there. But there, as I can tell, I haven't heard of them doing that at the Borgata, and the Borgata would know if they had more than one color for 5,000 unit chips. And so the dealers would recognize these things fairly quickly, wouldn't they? Well, unless they are that color and we're just seeing these pictures and thinking it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing to say. I mean, when we're talking about the home game with two completely different colored chips is what I believe people were saying. So
right.
They had, you know, that's one extreme. And I think that's weird, but that's fine, I guess. The other extreme is having all the ships the exact same color, right?
Right.
This is somewhere in between.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even like, oh, I didn't realize the Borgata had black 5,000 ships and...
white. No. Yeah. No, like gray,
you know,
gray.
Green. Yeah, you know, this was black and a shade of black, you know? So that's, I think, I can imagine in a tournament... I guess it was kind of frustrating, because it's Borgata, so you would think a little bit differently. But, you know, I travel a lot and play a lot of tournaments and places, and I know some of these smaller rooms are still using the ships that, you know, Doyle Brunson gave him back when he was 12.
Right.
And they were cruddy, they're in bad condition, and the stuff's worn off it, and you just kind of get used to it, and you look down, and sometimes I don't think I'd even be surprised if I saw a chip that was slightly faded versus the other ones, you know?
Yep.
And so maybe that's what happened here. Maybe just other people are like me. They travel. They've seen it enough. They just didn't think about it, even though it's Borgata. And didn't say anything until eventually they just saw a bunch of them. But here's another thing I want to say, too. I mean, I got a rant stored up here, which I'll end with. But,
all right.
The audacity of the people to introduce this and to think that they can get away with it. So... And maybe the joke's on me. Maybe they've been doing this a long time and getting away with it lots of places, right?
Right.
But these days, you know, I can't go online without people constantly talking about their M and how many big blinds they have, the average stack is, and that. People are really good at math at these tournaments now, and they've got, you know, Twitter and all kinds of stuff to do it, right? The math is not going to work out at some point, right? Isn't that going to be the big tip-off? Even if you get past the whole, let's say that you're the guy from Wally World or whatever it was in Beverly Hills Cop 3, and you're making all the fake stuff, and you're doing it really good so people can't see it, then eventually you're going to look up and go, wait a minute, I've got 70 big blinds, and the average stack is 400 big blinds? How did that happen? Or the opposite, I guess. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah,
you know what I mean?
I do know exactly what you mean. And here's the deal. It would take a long time before that moment would occur.
That's true. That's
and then
true.
And then there are color-ups that, when those color-ups happen, thousands of potential units are included or added to a tournament. I don't know how many they are. Could be millions, because when you're coloring up 25,000 chips.
Change. It's just the denominations of it. I mean, that average chip stack is going to be the same, you know... After the reentry period and everything's done, that number's going to be posted and it's not going to change.
Well, here's the deal, though. There are times where you'll have three greens and two greens at a table, and that's it. And there will be five greens at that table, and they're going to color up 100, and they're going to give two chips or whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever the majority would be.
Right,
there's a
right.
place where they round up.
That's not, true.
You know what I mean? So I don't think it always works out. And so if you're doing it at the 25,000 level or something. I mean, I don't know what level they color up at there, but I'm just saying.
Right. Okay,
you know,
that makes sense.
So there was a chance for some degree of fluctuation, but 2 million? That's a lot to me, no matter what point you do it at or what point you figure it out. But I do think it would take getting down to about 4 or 5 tables before you could actually say, whoa, how does he, you know, because you'd have to literally go, there could be a lot of short stacks on table 3. And you don't even know about them. So when you have 70 big blinds, you know, whatever. So you would really have to see all. So in other words, if you had 3 tables in front of you, then you could sort of do an eye glance, look around and go, hey, how does that guy have 70, 70, 70, 70 when there's only 30,000? You know, that's one way to do it. But it would take a long time to get to that point. That's what seems like it happened here, because there's only 27 people left. That's 3 tables.
Yeah, yeah.
It is crazy. And like you said, there is some serious audacity. I mean, I haven't seen something like this since the ESPN tilt. you know, I mean, really, I mean, it's crazy to think people would be, you know, I mean, and if it's 2 racks of 5,000 chips, obviously one person didn't do this. It was a team.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're not going to be able to just pull out 2 racks in the bathroom and put them in your pockets and then come out and spill them on the table. So, I mean, these things had to be bled into the system somehow. And it's really pretty ballsy along the lines of like Ocean's 13 kind of thing, you know? I mean, it's crazy.
Ocean's 13, they got away with it, though.
Yeah. Well, you don't know that. I mean, there could be an Ocean's 14 that shows they didn't, just like Ocean's 12 showed they didn't get away with it in 11. So, but you're right, though. And when we did see the chips were like, one is like Hunter Green, the other one's like Pastel Green. And it's like, unless they have that pastel green and that hunter green for like one for sit and goes and one for, you know, or whatever, which is very, very easily the case, could be the case, because they have so many tournaments in that place, and they could have, you know, different colors for different, so you know you're playing in a sit and go or whatever the hell it is, who knows. But why would they be circulating that photo to show, you know what I mean? That obviously that photo shows the disparity in the colors, and it's just, man, if somebody says, hey, you better, you know, make some counterfeit chips, you would think they would take a 5,000 chip off a table while they're playing in an event, take it home with them, and then match the colors or something. I mean, it's just, it wasn't even close.
Well, I wonder if this is going to speed up the use of RFID chips, at least at these big events. I mean, I don't expect Joe's Poker Room down the street to invest in those, but, you know, what's going to happen if this happens to the World Series of Poker this year?
Yeah.
In the main event. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is the pre-rant to my rant, but I think it's forcing casinos to really be serious about this, and I don't know what can be done to prevent it, but obviously RFID and technology and stuff like that would help a little bit, and there's tremendous expense there.
But now, let me stop you there. Explain to me how RFID would stop something like this from happening.
Well, it wouldn't stop it, but it would make it. I think you would identify it more quickly. You know, let's say if we're doing the full RFID ID, and you know the exact amount of chips and where they are at all times, and ideally you would use it not so much for the security in general. I think you'd use it for live reporting for web kind of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, well, Scott Long just went all in, and now he's doubled up to 200,000. I think at that point, because of Twitter, this is kind of why I like Twitter, even though I hate Twitter so much. I think the information would be out there, like, wait a minute. He was supposed to have only 100,000, but he's got 500,000 now. Where are all these extra chips come from? That doesn't mean that person had it. It just means that they've been introduced. I think it would help.
Hmm.
And I'm not smart enough to know the RFID if it knows that there are chips on the table that aren't RFID chips.
I mean, right, because the ones that are there are merely just transmitting something, whereas the ones that are fake won't be transmitting, but they still...
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's no way to know that fake ones are in play. There's only a way to know real ones.
Well, when the counts are off. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's not a great plan. But I don't know. So that's it. The other thing that I'm worried about is that, you know, down here in Florida, we've been arguing for years for the state to allow the poker rooms down here to have reduced surveillance on tournament tables.
Mm-hmm.
The argument has always been there's no cash involved in these tables. That's just tournament. And we don't need that full level of 7 cameras or whatever it is that's on a normal cash game table. We can share some cameras. You'll still be able to use the cameras. Will still be good enough to, you know, figure out disputed pots and things like that. But we don't need to worry about, you know, money being stolen and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I think with this happening, I'm really worried that now, you know, regulators are just going to say, hey, forget it. You know what happened to Borgata?
Yeah.
We got to have the surveillance. So I'm hopeful that once all this is done, and I know you mentioned this at the home game, I mean, they got cameras everywhere. Hopefully they'll be able to figure out who did this but it's probably going to take a long time to sift through all the surveillance. But I hope they can figure it out, and then that'll prove to people, hey. And I don't know what Borgata's surveillance is for their tournaments. It might be equal to a cash game and defeat my whole purpose here. But if it is limited like it is in lots of places and they're able to figure this out, then I think that's going to score one for those of us that believe that poker rooms shouldn't have to invest outrageous sums of money in surveillance for tournaments.
Yeah. And do you think that this might now actually have them even clamp down even more on bringing in like fanny packs and backpacks and stuff like that? Because
certainly could. Yeah. I mean, I would hope not, but yeah. I mean, eventually, I think they got to figure out what happened here and how it got in. I mean, obviously, I mean, we've all seen magic tricks, right? And you know, that stuff. For somebody that's really skilled at getting chips on the table, I don't think you can really do anything to prevent that. I don't think.
Yeah, no, there's no, I mean, if somebody's going to bring a few in their pockets, that's like, you're going to start going through the TSA pat-downs, you know, or whatever, you're like, come on into the poker room, but we got to check your body first. Oh, what's that
full
bulge?
Cavity search.
Is that a roll of chips in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me? You know, I mean, it's going to be crazy, you know, if they're going to have to get to that level just to play a poker tournament. So hopefully this goes away pretty quickly. And, you know, but, you know, it's sad. You know, when you think about all the things that people are doing to try to,
it's get more than sad, and that's the rant here, and I'll try to keep it short because we got a lot of good stuff to talk about when the rest of the show here. But this is what really gives me the red ass about this is that I'm just tired of the cheating.
Yeah.
You know, last week we talked about a guy that used the chopsticks to steal from the dealer Tokes, and the update on that is he got sentenced to probation, so we could talk about it a bit more. We talked about the people with the stealing the laptops and putting the virus on them. And now this, I am just upset because this makes us all look bad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We all look like cheaters and thugs. We all look like the people that all the opponents for gaming think we are. Yeah. And I'm not that person. You're not that person. Most of the people listening to our show probably aren't that person. And, of course, most of the people in the poker world aren't that people, but it reinforces the stereotype that we're all criminals. And I hate that.
Yeah.
So my rant here is that I think it's time for us to stand up as poker players and distance ourselves from this stuff, not just sweep it under the table and say, oh, golly gee, there's bad apples in every bushel. I think we needed to be proactive about this and not only severely chastise the people that take advantage of other players at the poker table in this kind of way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we also need to work really hard together as a community in figuring out how to prevent this stuff. So, you know, I know what's going to happen is, as you mentioned, you know, what's going to happen. Maybe they're not going to let you bring fanny packs in. There's going to be some kind of reaction to this from the casino side, right?
Yes.
Whether they want to do or whether the Gaming Commission forces them to. And I know what's going to happen is poker players are going to go, this is ridiculous. I didn't do anything wrong, and I'm paying the price. And I empathize with that. But I think at this point what we need to do is we need to get our house in order. And if we have to, you know, all sacrifice a little bit because of these other folks, I think that's what we need to do. And we need to be out there front and center and saying, hey, we need to do whatever we can to keep these jackwagons out of our games. Because it's going to be incredibly hard for us to get online poker approved because everybody thinks that's cheating on there. It's going to get harder for people to approve more casinos close to our home because this is just more ammunition for all the people that hate us.
Yep.
Random. And,
no, but those are all valid, very well thought out points. And it is, and I'm not trivializing this at all, but it is reminiscent of 9/11. When here we were just saying, hey, it's very easy to just get on a plane and fly to wherever we want and then have a care in the world. And then, boom, some religious nut jobs flew some planes into buildings and killed 3,000 people.
Yep.
And so what did we do? We said, holy crap, why didn't we realize this? And now we have locks on, you know, the cabin door to the cockpit. And now we have, you know, long lines for, hey, you know what? You want to be able to travel and feel safe? Then you're going to have to stand in line for a little while. You know, you're going to have your bag checked and go through magnetic things and those little woo 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 things that go around you when you're standing with your hands over your head. They're going to have to throw out my toothpaste once in a while, and I'm going to be able to bitch about it on the show. But hey, it's the cost of feeling safe in the air. And the same with this. If we're going to have to surrender our, you know, backpacks and fanny packs, and there's going to have to be a little bit of a delay while they verify chip counts or something, hey, we're going to have to defend that now, and we're not going to have to bitch about it, because you're right. For you and me, it's our livelihood.
Absolutely.
Imagine if poker went away, and what, now we'd have to go work for the St. Pete Times again? The Tampa Bay Times? No thanks. I'd rather chew on a ball of tinfoil and grate my hair with a cheese grater.
I would rather you do that, too.
Yeah, that'd be great, rather than work for them again. So, yeah, please, guys, you know what, just, you know what, have a voice. Don't, if you see something happening, speak up, you know, or whatever, or deal with it, and don't bitch about it, because it's all coming. So, it's a shame that this happened, and that it happened in such a large, you know, of, I mean, maybe it's a good thing that it happened in such a large event that everyone, you know, knows about and sees about. Maybe. Who knows? But it is a real shame.
Yeah. All right, some more fun stuff. We did have a home game this week. As far as I can tell, no counterfeit chips were introduced. So Had a great time, and we welcomed Don, one of our longtime listeners. He just moved to the area and came and joined the home game. I know he enjoyed his one and only time coming because he won, and he's not going to be invited back. but no, it's always great to have new people in there, and a great guy, and just you know more proof that the Antiup Nation is a good group of folks, and look forward to having them at the home game more often. The other thing I thought was interesting is folks that listen to the show know we play 6 hours at our home game, you know, noon to six when we have it. And dealer's choice, so once or twice around, depending on how many people we have, we the next person gets to pick the game. And this has happened before, but it doesn't happen often, but we never call No Limit Hold'em.
Crazy.
In 6 hours. Well, now, so, we did play No Limit Crazy Pineapple, and we played some other kind of No Limit games, but we did not play No Limit Hold'em.
And by that fact alone, everyone knows that I had to have a winning session now, because when Cosenza's losing, that's when No Limit Hold'em gets called. But or usually when somebody's losing like significantly, that's when it's called. But it really never got to that in the home game. One of the people that went broke went home, but before he could call it. But other than that, really never really got to that point where no one called it. Plus, there's such a variety of the games that we have in there now that there are certain ways you can get your money back if you're down anyway without having to call No Limit Hold'em. So,
but isn't that telling though that what we're saying is that it's almost always going to get called when someone's stuck.
Yeah,
it's like the home run ball, right? It's not a game that we think for whatever reason we enjoy playing or people enjoy playing or enjoy playing as much as the other games is probably more accurate. But it's a game that when you're stuck, you go for it because you can't make up that distant difference in
limit games.
Limit that quickly.
Right, that quickly, exactly.
Which I think goes back to the part of the problem that I have in trying to educate people on that they should be playing limit in general, because now they're saying, well, see, Scott, you got to go no limit if you're going to make a lot of money. Well, short term, yes.
Right, you can lose a lot of money too, but that's they have nothing else to lose, so they call it now. In other words, if you go broke in the first three hands, you're probably still not going to call No Limit Hold'em if you've got 5.5 hours to go. But you'll call No Limit Hold'em if it's an hour and a half to go, and you're down 70 or whatever. So I think that the best part about not having to call it this was because we have so many different show games, and we even introduced another game to it this week, and that just kept us from having to call that game because there were some huge pots in this game.
Yeah, I know Gambit hates Korshaval. He just did not enjoy it. We called it three times in a row. Then I heard later he's playing it online with one of our other listeners, so he's trying to figure it out, I guess. The reason I hate it is I don't know how to spell it. You had to keep correcting it on the file.
I know.
But then the other reason I hate it is, and I don't hate it. I enjoy playing it. I'm looking forward to playing it again. I think it's a really interesting game. But I got too smart for my own good in this game.
Yeah.
So real quickly, my hand was deuce, deuce, tray, tray, tray. And real quickly, for folks that don't know what this game is, it's like Big O, so it's 5-card Omaha, played high-low. But so you get 5 cards instead of 4, still got to use 2 in your hand and 3 on the board. And you get a teaser card on the flop before action starts, as I was calling it, the fluffer.
Yeah, you get one card turned over right away, immediately, while you get your cards dealt to you. You don't.
So then the rest of the flop is 2 cards, so it's a full 3-card flop. But you get one, so it's like a preview.
Right, you get to do your betting with that one card showing, and then you see the other 2 cards as a flop. So.
And I know you're going to say this after I get done with my rant about it, but you're going to let people know how accurate the word teaser is
yes.
on that card. But for me, I'm sitting here, I mean, I like to analyze games. That's why I like to play these games, because I'm never going to pretend that I'm an expert at any game. But I think I've got a mind enough that if you introduce a game to me, you give me some time, I can figure out, at least basically, how to exploit certain parts of it, or at least stay out of trouble. And so in this game, I'm looking at, I've got 2 deuces, 3 trays, an ace come on the flop, and I don't know if it's a 5, some other low card that wasn't a deuce or a tray. And, 2 of them, I'm sorry. So I flopped the nut low, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't imagine that anybody else at the table had deuce tray, because I had 5 blockers to it.
Right.
Including 3 of the tray blockers. So somebody actually had to have that. So at that point, I thought, because normally in Omaha high-low, it's silly to bet bet the low only because you get the danger of being quartered and you're only going to get half the pot. Here, I felt completely confident that I had the low locked up.
Yeah.
From the flop. And it had three other people in the hand that obviously either thought they had deuce four, so they had a bad low, or they had a high. So now I'm trying to whipsaw the heck out of them, right?
Yeah.
And I thought I could do it with impunity, so I kept raising and betting and raising, and I get down and I turn it over, and gosh dag nabbit! Somebody else had deuce tray! I got quartered! How did I get quartered in this game?
Well, you can easily get quartered, but how do you get quartered with deuce, deuce, tray, tray, tray? That's hard.
It's one of those things you had to keep looking at your hand, and I'm like, what happened?
you were beside yourself when that happened. You were just hilarious. It was like, and you were dropping some serious F-bombs. You were not happy. And normally, you know, when you get upset in the home game, it's a rarity because you usually let stuff roll right off you and you'll just go into your room and get some more money or something and come back. But when this happened, you were just incredulous. You could not believe it was like impossible. It's as if you almost had an 8-card hand in your hand. You had all the deuces and all the trays and you couldn't believe that someone else could possibly have deuce tray there. And you were right. You were raising with impunity. And I said, wow, who has what? Because when you're watching this unfold, when there's three people in a hand and they're going crazy, you think, oh, someone's getting quartered here. So why aren't they just slowing down? Because there's no way both two people think they have the high.
Right.
Why aren't they slowing down? And, it was hilarious when you and Andrew turned over the deuce tray.
I mean, it was reminiscent of Honeymoon in Vegas. It's yeah. Almost unbeatable. That's not the same as unbeatable. I know that now! just unbelievable. Because, I mean, here's the worst thing is that it's a hand you shouldn't play. You should never play this hand, I think, in Courchevel.
No, and were
you
blind?
Really play this hand in... I think I was.
Okay, because there's no way that you would just come in for a raise or even called the completion with that hand, would you? Because you know you're just playing for half anyway, if a low gets there.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're playing for half, but you feel pretty, as I said, really confident that half is all yours. So, you know, again, I mean, you want to scoop, that's always the goal here, but if you can lock up one half and know that it's all yours, that you're not going to get quartered, and you've got multiple other people in the pot, then it's profitable.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen very often where you can feel really confident about that, particularly at the low. But in this case, I'm like, because it's not going to happen in Omaha, right?
Right.
Because you only have four cards. Now I got five. I mean, the only thing would be worse if we were playing six-card Omaha and I had the third deuce in my hand, too. Still lost. So in that sense, it is profitable. And I could get this hand 100 times and make a ton of money off of it, 99. I just happened to be the first time I got it that I ended up losing money. I assume. I didn't. I was so upset I didn't count, but I assume I did, getting quartered there.
Well,
because really, it was just the three of us in the hand, so I had to lose money at that point.
Yeah, you probably lost a little bit.
The guy at the high, the guy that split the low with me and me. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe split up a couple early bets, but that was it.
Yeah, that was crazy. I think you had to have been on the blind to play that hand because I really don't think you would have. Because, like I said, you still have to have a little get there to play this hand. And I know you get a little teaser card that might say, okay, now I've got
it. Well, that's just it. I think the teaser card on that hand was an ace.
It was an ace, yeah.
So at that point, I mean, absolutely, now you're thinking, because that's a big downfall to deuce tray in Omaha high-low is you've got to wait for that ace to come. And then the ace kills your high, or, I mean, gives somebody else a high that you can't beat. But at that point, if I know the ace is already there...
Yeah.
Then I just got that's the big card I'm worried about.
Man. Well, I do regret it because I called it. You know, we were joking around because Scott was like somewhere else in this game for some reason. I don't know why, but when we were playing the home game, every time I got to Scott, we were kind of like waiting on him, and he's like, oh, it's on me, sorry. And he said it like 100 times. So as a joke, when the game was after I called the game, it was getting close to back to me. I was the point person that when it got to me, the game changed. I was joking and said, okay, Scott, so when the game it's going to be getting, make sure you know what game you want to call. So I was busting his chops. So then it was like a running joke all week or all day. And so when it got to the guy on my right and it was his turn to call, I said, you know, I'm going to be prepared for the game. And so I thought long and hard for like a good 15 minutes about what game I'm going to call. And I was like, oh, yeah, Courchevel. So, of course, I call it and Scott gets that hand. And then so... immediately, on like the first or second hand of the calling, 4 comes on the teaser card, and I look down, and I have 2 4s in my hand. I'm like, wow, I know I can't be losing at this point. I have the only set possible, and so I should raise with impunity, as Scott had mentioned. So a couple of calls, gets back to me, and I raise. And, of course, it's limit, so no one's going anywhere. So, yay, the raise does nothing. And then the flop, on the first time I had it, the flop came just rags, like a queen or whatever it was. It was just rags. And ultimately, it was a pretty big pot, and I got rivered by Don with another set. It was a set of kings. And the thing about this game is that people will go both ways. They'll have a low and a high in their hand. And so the teaser will keep them along with, like, you know, okay, I got an overpair to what's showing, or okay, I've got a set, or okay, I got 60% of a low now because that card's low. So it keeps some hands in that may not have played. And when you flop a set, you think, oh, this is fantastic. Well, you have to dodge so many streets and so many. You know, it's not like you see all 3 cards and you've got top set and you can tell what's going on. You only see 1 card and you have your set. You think, okay, I'm going to raise it with impunity because I know I have the best hand. But ultimately, they're going to track you down. And unless, you know, so for me, at 3 times this happened where I flopped, not flopped, but teased that set, or whatever you want to call it, fluffed a set. And I raised. So this the third time I didn't raise. The third time I said, you know what? I've already lost twice this way. Let me try to do some sort of misdirection and just call. And again, it was a 4, and I flopped a set. And then it came deuce-deuce for the official flop. So I'm like, unless somebody has quads, which more power to them, as we always say, and I had a backdoor low, I'm like, I've got the nuts here. So I sort of slow-played it a little bit, but then bet big on the turn when another rag came. And then on the river, Don again 2-outed me. It was a queen on the end. He had a pair of queens in his hand, but he was going for the nut low. So, again, he backed into it by going for the low. He backs into a high. That beats mine. And it was absolutely brutal. I think I dropped a bunch of F-bombs there, too, because I couldn't believe. You know, 3 times in a row, I flopped the only set possible and still lost to a river. And the river on the middle one was a straight. It was like a really weird straight, too. Like, he had 6-8 in his hand, and it came 4-5-7, a 7 on the river. When that wasn't even possible to think that you would stick around for that gut shot or whatever. And then it got there. And it's like, because he was going for the low with the other 2 cards in his hand, and a gut shot got there. And so it's really a difficult game. And I'm really starting to believe that you do need to play at pot limit. Just because of that, the nature of that teaser card and what else that can happen. You know, I mean, I understand that PLO 8 is the bastard devil's child, but you know, I think that Courcheval, there may be a more plausible reason for making it pot limit, just because you can protect. You can't protect at all in this game when you play at limit. But, you know, that could be wrong. It could just be me bitching and moaning because I lost. I don't know. But it's definitely a game that will generate some big pots if you play it right. You know, and awesome. We had massive pots. I mean, we were splitting pots, and the chips that were on the left or on the right were bigger than any pots we had played all night in any of the other games. It was crazy how big the pots get in that. So, you know, be cautious, but I actually think it'd be better playing at PLO, believe it or not, or without a low. Just play Courcheval high, you know. I might call that, because that's just big O, except you get to see the 1 card first. So, but yeah, lots of money and really fun.
All right, well, don't forget to visit Annie at PokerTour.com for details on our February 15th to 16th event at Cordova Casino in California. You can win your way on a cover of our magazine for just $220. And also our March event at Running Aces in Minnesota in March. And also visit AnnieUpCruises.com for details on cruise giveaways at Snoqualmie in Seattle, Grand Sierra in Reno, MGM Grand in Las Vegas, and Running Aces in Minnesota. And get details on our March 30th cruise out of Los Angeles and our May Transatlantic from Florida to England.
All right, call the floor. You find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo, and ask about the AnnieUp logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. This comes from Alex Baker. He says, I was playing in a 1-3 no-limit hold'em game in a St. Louis casino. Two players who were friends joined our table and sat one seat apart, one in the small blind and the other under the gun. The button raises to 20, and the small blind moves all in for about 300. The under gun seems a bit upset, folds, and tosses his cards in hard. They fly across the table and embed themselves face down in his buddy's cards. The dealer says the small blind's cards were not protected, and his hand is dead, and the $300 stays in the middle. The button says he was going to call the shove anyway and chose queen-queen. Small blind complains that his bet and hand should stand because he can determine which cards were his. Floor says the small blind must only match the button's original raise, but his hand is still dead, so he pulls back $300 and commits only the $20 call, which the button then collects. Was this correct, or should the whole $300 shove have gone to the button as the only remaining live hand the dealer had said?
All right, here's what Jody says. He says, I agree with the floor on this one. It would be different for me if someone had called the 300 before the hand was killed. Some inexperienced floor people were inclined to allow a player with the hand in question to declare their two cards. This is a mistake, especially when the cards that were mixed with the hand belonged to that player's friend.
I find it weird. How does this person muck cards one seat away from his friend, across a table, and then into his friend's cards? I don't know how that happened. Even if you're sitting on a corner, you know, you still have to shoot it to the middle for the dealer. So how do you... it must have been either a really, you know, uncoordinated throw, or someone's not sitting where they said they were sitting. That's kind of bizarre for me, but...
Yeah,
I agree with the ruling, though. I mean, what Jody said, that's the way it goes.
Now protect your hand.
All right, we get to complete an O'Malley's move today. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a 2-5 no-limit hold'em cash game. There are quite a few solid players at this table, with two inexperienced players and one maniac. It is worth noting that this is the only no-limit hold'em game going in this small 5-table room, which explains the inexperienced players. However, these two players seem to have some money, like to splash around, and both have bigger stacks than we do. They're both middle-aged and are there to gamble and have a good time. But they can be pushed off hands if the situation is right. It's folded around to us in the MP with 850. We're down about 150, and we look down at the Ace of Spades, Queen of Spades. Well, first in, with a decent starting hand and a solid image, we make it $20 to go. It's folded around to the hijack, who calls. Everyone else folds, except for the big blind. These are both the inexperienced players. There's $60 in the pot, and the flop comes down the Ace of Clubs, 7 of Clubs, 4 of Hearts. The big blind leads out for a weak $5. We've seen him make this bet before, and it usually means weakness. We pop him to 50. The hijack calls, and after a bit of thought, so does the big blind. The turn is the 9 of diamonds. With $210 in the pot, the big blind leads out again for a small $25. This is another interesting bet, which, again, feels very weak. Maybe he's trying to get a free river to hit a flush. We're not going to let him set the price, and we feel like we're ahead. We make it $150. Finally, the hijack folds. The big blind thinks for another short time before calling. There's 5-10 in the pot, and the river is the 4 of spades. The big blind contemplates his decision and finally makes a bet of $400. What's the move?
I'm not so sure what's given O'Malley his confidence in his hand. We may very well have had the best hand the whole way, including now. But I don't see any evidence to be confident of it. The big blind's bets are, of course, non-standard, but being an inexperienced player, I think that's to be expected. In my mind, we have no information to base our action on, so I'm folding, and even more so because the small bet slash call, river shove, is often a move I think a new player will do when he's trying to keep a player in, and then weirdly try to maximize value on the river.
Yeah, you know, that is a huge bet for a newbie. And another thing is, too, is, you know, a newbie really wouldn't understand the whole overshove looks like a bluff play. You know, so my instincts are with you there. It tells me it's a legit sort of reeling them in, kind of maximize newbie mistake. So I would definitely fold. Here we go. Here's part two.
Hello again. This was a tough one. Why the huge bet on the river? Had he adjusted his play after we pushed him off hands when he made these smaller bets earlier? He's unlikely to make an adjustment like that. Additionally, he would have re-raised preflop with ace-jack or better. This could very well be something like ace-9, ace-7, or even ace-4. It could also be sevens or perhaps nines. This might be a busted flush or straight draw, but we're pretty sure that's the most unlikely scenario. I honestly can't think of a hand we beat here, and I don't want to lose any more of our stack on this one. We sigh and mug. Our opponent scoops in the pot, but doesn't reveal his hand. Ah, well, we can only speculate. Until next time, I am Malcolm O'Malley saying the hell with Ace-Queen. I'm done playing it. I hope to see you on the felt.
Hear, hear on Ace-Queen.
Hear, hear.
Forget Big Chick. Hey, it should be renamed the Bankroll Bleeder. And that's probably even too nice. It's not even a bleeder. It's more like a bankroll buster.
Hemorrhager.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've said it before, I'm going to keep saying, I think people lose more money on Ace-Queen than any other hand.
Yeah.
And you know, my only nit with O'Malley on this hand was the turn raise, I think. You know, it's a necessary move if we're confident our opponent is on a flush draw and trying to set his own price. But I just didn't get that sense that was going on here. You know, we just had an ace. I don't know what he had, but I just felt that he had something better than us. So at this point, you know, when he made that weird call, that raise, and then he best ride back into us on the turn, it's either ballsy or he's got something.
Yeah,
we didn't have enough to make that turn raise, I don't think.
No, here's the deal with me. Sometimes at the end in the river in a cash game, when I'm put in a situation like that, I like to fall back on my tournament adage of I don't like to go broke without at least two pair. And I think even Mattiso told me that when we were hanging out at Derby Lane once. He said, I think we're behind here. And I certainly wouldn't want to risk that much money on one pair and a queen kicker, like you said. As to the turn that you were talking about, that I don't mind the raise so much, but I wouldn't have bet as much as he
that
did.
Much, yeah.
I would have bet half that and found out what I needed to find out. Because once I get a call there,
that's a good point.
I know it's not a draw. He raised six times the bet, rather than, say, the standard three. And if I had done that to 75 and he called, I don't think he's drawing for 75. I think he's got a hand that's beaten me, and I would have gotten the same information.
And we would have saved $75, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah. So I think that's what I would have done differently here.
And I didn't do the math, but that raise would probably still – I mean, the raise you need to make at that point is enough to make a flush draw make an incorrect call, right? So
yeah, I
didn't do the math to see whether 75 is enough for that. But whatever it is, it's not 150.
Yeah, 150 is just so much to risk to just get information. I mean, you may be wanting to get them to fold, but we all know that newbies don't fold their calling stations, and, you know, he's not going to fold a second, the best hand to you. He's just not. He's just going to keep playing it. So, I mean, O'Malley could have been thinking of something totally different than we are, but in my mind, that raise was way too big, and I'm not going to call that bet on the end. There's just no way.
You know, the flip side with somebody that bets small like this, I think, is that eventually that's not going to work for them, right?
Right.
I think I described it as, non-traditional. It's really non-optimal, too, I think. You know, he might have won this hand, but if he keeps betting small like that, you're going to win your share of pots off him because he's going to let you catch up with your draws at that point.
Yep.
Or even, you know, even pick up a second pair on a river that's going to beat him. So I'm never going to complain about how this guy plays. He's going to let me win a lot of pots for a cheap price, I think. So.
Yeah, you just got to be able to play enough with him. That's the deal to get that money back or to get that situation to come up. But, yeah, you're right.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@andyupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Andy Up. Check out Jay Design's great cards and more at www.classicplayingcards.com. And our hand of the week comes from Blaz Man this week.
He still listens to the show?
He does. In fact, actually, he says, I've been listening to shows when I can.
Awesome.
I don't know what that means, because we all have 24 hours a day, so... But no, it was good to hear from him. I ran into him in Vegas last year. It was nice to see him again. So, yeah. And surprisingly, since I've been keeping track of swag winners, he has not gotten any swag.
Hmm. Well, that's going to change
today. Obviously.
That's going to change right now.
All right. So to give you a little update here, it says. I have to say that I enjoyed the show more than I did years ago. Oh, thanks. Because when you're going through the Hand of the Week and the McMinute, you guys go through a bunch of scenarios, and this is how people that are serious players should be thinking about hands. There are lots of times when you guys will start evaluating, and without knowing the player, you cannot possibly make an accurate play, but you guys go through the scenarios, which is fantastic. I've been playing a lot more in the last year, and absent player information, I have learned to assume that the player is making the worst possible move. He says this week's Hand of the Week was a great example.
Okay.
All right, so that's the teaser.
Okay.
That's the fluffer.
Okay.
The course of all of this Hand of the Week.
The course of all.
All right. He said, the bubble just burst in a $100 bounty tournament at Mohegan Sun. Blinds are 500, 1,000, and Blas has squiggly 30,000.
Okay.
We are six-handed, and he says, a drunk guy that I played with at the first table sits down about three hands prior to this one. He's going to end up being the villain here. So he says, what I picked up on him from the first table is I saw him get married the top pair and outkick someone, and I saw him raise appropriately with something like ace-queen. And he says the drunk guy here has squiggly 24.
Okay.
All right, we're on the button, and the drunk guy is under the gun and limps. Under the gun plus two, who is described as a wild player, limps, and it folds to us on the button with ace of spades, 10 of spades.
Hey, it's my hand.
Yeah, you're the only one that's going to win with this. So,
and you said the blinds were 5 and 1,000, right?
500, 1,000.
Right, yeah, pretty standard raise, probably 4,000 or so, right? Because you got a limper already.
Mm-hmm.
We got two limpers though, right? Maybe 5,000.
Yeah, I do the Jonathan a little smallish bet. I'll do 3,500.
Okay.
4,000.
Even so, I mean, between...
Well, you got the extra limper, so...
Yeah, you got two limpers, so... If you went 4 or 5,000, I think that's fine. Somewhere around there is good. Standard. And you got position, right? You say we're on the button?
Yeah, you got position, and you got the most craptastic hand ever invented by the poker guys.
Yeah, ace, 10 spades. It's my favorite hand. Not.
All right, well, our hero raises to 4,000.
Yeah, okay.
The drunk guy thinks for a bit and calls, and the other player folds, so we're heads up with a pot of 11,500, and the flop is ace of hearts, 10 of clubs, queen of spades, and our opponent checks.
All right, well, we know that the guy probably doesn't have a better two pair than us, because we had said earlier that when he had ace queen, he raised with it. Mm-hmm. So we're not thinking he has ace queen. We're thinking if he had pocket aces, you know, he would have raised. If he had pocket tens, he would have raised. If he had pocket queens, he would have raised. So we think we're only behind one hand, king jack, and king jack probably would check there, but we're not thinking about the nuts here. We're thinking about narrowing down this guy's range. I think we're way ahead. I'm not really afraid of losing him because it's a raise pot. We got some dead money in there. So even if I bet now and took it down, I'd be happy. So I'm definitely going to bet. I'm not going to get too fancy here because there's a huge draw there for Broadway, and generally people play high cards. So it's about 11 in the pot, 11.5, you said? 11.5?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, obviously, the pretty standard bet would be about 2/3 the size of the pot. So about $8,000, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Blasman bets. $8,000.
Yay. That's because we're both from Connecticut. So
That's true. Yes. You guys share a brain.
That's right.
Not a lot of brains going around up there. All right, so we bet $5,000, and he says our opponent shoots me a look. You know that look. His eyes half closed, pulling his chin to his chest and raising his eyebrows as he closes his eyes fully. And then calls.
All right. Whatever.
The problem is...
Is this a novel or is this a Hand of the Week?
But you know, that's a look that all drunk people have, so it's not even a poker one. He's just trying to keep his eyes open.
Right.
All right, pot's 19-5 now. The turn is the Jack of Diamonds. So the board now is Ace of Hearts, 10 of Clubs, Queen of Spades, Jack of Diamonds. I think we can agree not a wonderful card for us, right?
Right.
The guy number two who folded, remember?
Yeah.
Slams the table.
Oh, geez. Some free information from someone who's not in the hand. Thank you.
And then the drunk guy goes all in with his remaining $12,000.
All right. So we're convinced at least one king has folded, right? from the position of the slamming his hand. So,
or pocket jacks could be.
Yeah, I guess, but it certainly doesn't feel like that because he would be like, well, a king could be beating my pocket jacks. So, feels like a king is gone. So now there's only three kings left on the deck. The guy had a king. All right, so if the guy had a king, what card would he have with it that he would have limped with? Or if he had a king, what card would he have had with it that he would have called an 8,000 bet? Because right now it's only a gut shot for it to be getting there.
Right, right.
Ace-king would have raised. King-10 likely would have folded. King-queen might have raised, could have limped. It's tough to put him on a king here unless maybe king-jack limps. You know, maybe king-jack limps. But... And then does he call a raise with King Jack? That's the rookie hand they call it. Mm-hmm. He is drunk.
That's really the X factor in this hand, but we can talk about that later.
yeah.
Trying to find rationality in someone who's been hitting the Johnny at the table all day is difficult, I think.
Yeah, would Queen Jack have stuck around with hitting middle pair, no kicker on that bet on the flop? I'm just trying to figure out a hand that has King Jack. You know, Queen Jack is possible. We have a better two pairs, so that's a good thing for us. Yeah, I mean, it could be something like that where he's hit two pair now and he's protecting his hand, doesn't believe we have a king. So there's 19.5 in the pot he bet. How much did he go all in for?
12K.
So there's 31, almost 32.
We had him covered by 6 at the beginning of the hand.
All right, so we'd have 6 left if we called and lost, which is only 6 big blinds, which is not really great. I don't think I can fold here. We got top and bottom. You know, this guy is drunk, and there's only one hand that beats us is a king, and the only hand that's plausible for king here that would have played it the way he did is King Jack. I think maybe I just don't see this guy limping with a big king. Yeah. You know, like King Queen or Ace King. I mean, if he raised an Ace Queen earlier, then he's probably going to raise when he's first into the pot with. If he's under the gun, there's no king that he limps with. You're under the gun. If you're not going to re-raise after we raise, what could you possibly have had under the gun that has a king?
Re-raise after we waste.
After we waste.
See that 4 times fast.
So I think we're ahead here. I think this guy's got something like a queen jack hand or like a. Not ace jack. No, it feels like he's either bluffing or he's got like a queen jack. I don't think he has a king because if he had a king, it just seems like he would have under the gun would have had to have a better card with it and would have had us beat already anyway, or would have re-raised when we raised when it got back to him. So I feel like we're ahead here. I'm going to make this call, which is not easy for me to do. Andy's drunk.
This is one of these situations where I think I look at this differently than other people and probably get to the same. Conclusion, but this is the way I look at it. One, the bubble just burst in this tournament, right?
Yeah.
So we know we're in the money.
Yeah.
So we can gamble a little bit more. In general, everybody says, hey, we're in this tournament to win it, not cash.
Yeah.
So we've already cashed. So this is an opportunity to almost double up in this hand. I don't know what the average chip stack is here, but, you know, if we get this guy's stack, it's 24 plus the blind. So that's a pretty nice... boost to our chip stack, right?
Right.
I know you're concerned about having 6,000 left with 500, 1,000. That's never a concern for me. That's 6 big blinds. We're already in the money, so if I'm wrong here or if he sucks out on me, however it works out, I'm not happy that I just lost a considerable amount of my stack.
Right.
But I think 6,000 is enough for me to still get some people to fold. And if maybe get a double or triple up. So I'm not too worried about that. We have outs to whatever he has.
And we have tie outs, too, if a king comes.
Almost outs everything. I guess he could have pocket aces, right? And that would be...
Right. Well, the plausible things here is that we have outs, too, if he has a king, really, is what we're thinking about.
Yeah, so we have outs to our full house. If we think the slamming guy has a king, and we think this guy might have a king, there's only two kings left, but there are two kings left.
Yeah, there are outs.
So we have outs. So at that point, just that analysis alone, to me, is enough for me to make this call.
Yeah.
So then you go to all the stuff that you talked about, which is perfect and great. The fact that this guy's drunk and he could be doing this with 7 deuce for all we know. all that stuff just fortifies the fact that I've already come into a decision that I'm comfortable with even before that. So at this point, is it going to suck if I call and he turns over to King and I don't improve? Yeah, but I think at this point in this tournament, it would be different if we were on the bubble here.
Yeah.
And we haven't cashed yet, and or I was going to be out of the tournament if I was wrong. But all those factors, I think, to me, work up to the fact that this is one of those chances that you have to take if you're going to win a tournament, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, let's recap. He's drunk. He only last time we saw him play a decent hand was a decent hand he raised with it. We are still in the tournament. We already are in the money, and we have outs to redraw if we're wrong. That's right there. It's five things right there that makes it worth a call, I think, here. And there's enough money in the pot to do it anyway. I mean, if you win this, then you're going to have a big stack, or at least what I think is a big stack, because if you win it, you're going to have 50, almost 60,000 chips. When it's 500,000, you have 60 big blinds, and there's only a few people left. So you're clearly, you know, going to be sitting pretty. So this is definitely a chance to take, I think.
Yeah. So this is what Blah says. I go into the tank and replay the hand. I think about the preflop action. What is he limp calling with there? Yeah. Figure the following. A weak ace. After all, we are six-handed, and he is drunk. King-jack. Queen-jack, queen-ten. I think he's raising preflop under the gun with king-queen, ace-king, yeah. King-king, jack-jack, queen-queen, ace-ace.
Yeah.
So I dismiss these hands. I figure the only hand I am really afraid of here is king-jack. Then I think about the guy that slammed his hand on the table. He must have had a king. So there are only three kings left. He has king-jack. I am only redrawing two kings just to chop. Would he have called the flop with king-jack? He does not seem to be concerned that I might have a king, or maybe he's just pot committed in his mind. I've seen him married to the hands before. He is really drunk, and I don't think he's considering my hand at all. For me, it comes down to the question of if he can call the $8,000 bet on the flop with king-jack. I decide that he holds a weak ace. If I'm right, I get $25 cash. Yeah, remember, it's a bounty tournament. And I'm getting squiggly 3-1. He says, if I listen to the pod odds to show again, I might be getting 20-1.
Nice. Yeah. Little dig there.
I will still have $6,000 left if I call and lose. There's really only one logical hand that beats me here, and I don't think he has it. I call, and he yells out, two pair! And I table my ace-10, and he shows queen-jack.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why he calls after the flop. I was wrong about what he would dunk off a third of his stack with, but the river was some blank, and I took down the pot in a $25 bounty. After the hand, another player said that was a sick call. That prompted me to think about the hand after it was over, and I don't think it was all that sick of a call. I just think the commenting player is not really paying attention to the details of the hand, which I don't think a lot of people do.
That's a good point. Well, the one question I had was he said something in the lines of, can he call an 8,000 bet on the flop with king-jack? Well, in other words, he has the nuts there. Why wouldn't he just call there? Is he worried that he's going to get drawn on? And that he flops the nuts with king-jack.
It's obvious that he's pot committed at that point, so he might as well just...
Really, oh, he might as well just show. Okay.
I'm guessing.
I'm thinking you got the nuts, and there's really no there's no flush on the turn, so you're only worried about board pairing. You know, I would slow play there sometimes. So, but maybe that's what he meant. Just that, why not just shove? Okay. But yeah, wow, and I forgot about it being a bounty too. So there's that $25 too that you can win if you're right. Yeah, I forgot about that. So there you go. That's cool.
I think his last sentence, it's what's telling, I think, and he's right, that I think just on the surface, people are looking at that board. And I find I'm guilty of this too when I'm in a hand and not really going to pay attention because it's not my money that I'm concerned about. And you see that kind of board, ace, 10, queen, jack, and go, gosh, it's very easy for someone to have a king there, so it's very easy to fold. And I'm sure that's what prompted the sick call comment, is that just on that, if you're just walking by the table and you look down, it is a sick call.
Yeah.
At that point. But if you're at the table and you think about it like Blas did and as we did, then he's right. It's really not all that sick of a call, and there are lots of reasons to make it. Even if, I would say if the guy turned over a king and I knew he had a king, that changes it. But even then, I think there's some reasons to think about it.
Yeah. All right, Blas, thanks for sending in a hand from the Nutmeg State. Much appreciated, and glad you're still listening to the show and giving us a zinger or two once in a while. I'm Chris Crescenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.